Now, on this Invest Talk podcast, Justin Klein listens to your questions.
Let's go to Ken in Texas. He wants to talk about corporate bonds.
Yeah, Justin, you know, I've always heard that you're supposed to allocate according to your age, like subtract your age from, 100. What kind of credence do you give that?
And provides unbiased answers.
Well, I think the 100 minus your age is a good baseline. But I don't think it should be used as gospel. Everyone's a little bit different, and their time horizon's different.
Invest Talk. Over 40 million downloads and counting. Across America and around the world, your participation makes it unique. 888-99-CHART.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, April 4th, 2022 edition of Invest Talk. I am Justin Klein, and I'm excited for this hour with you to discuss whatever is on your mind, money, finance, investment related. And my goal here is, as always, is to help you take that next step in your own version, your own path towards financial freedom. And in a market that is unique, in at least our recent memory, it's time to try to gain as much perspective about the long-term cycles that happen in the market, in economies, in politics. And all that plays into how you should look at your assets, your investment strategy, as well as your saving strategy. And so on today's show, I'm going to give you some perspective using my 20 plus years of investment experience. I'm going to give you a lot of data and ultimately give you the tools to take advantage of volatility as opposed to being a victim of volatility. So many people are. They're victims of their emotions. And nothing creates emotion like volatility. Both ways. Fear and greed. Fear when volatility is the downside and greed when volatility is to the upside. So you probably want strategies and data and that are successful. And that's what I'm going to help you with on today's radio show and podcast. And I'm going to operate with my mission statement, which is always independent thinking and shared success. So no matter what we speak about, a market strategy, a news event, a particular stock or sector, I'm here to present it all without bias and give you the facts. So I encourage you to contact me with your finance and investment questions right now during our live stream program from 4 to 5 Pacific time. Or if you're listening after hours, that's great too. I know a lot of you are. You can leave a question on our Anytime Voice Bank. Still, the same number is 888-99-CHART. So let's get right to our first listener question now.
Hello, this is Dan from Wisconsin. I had a question for you fellas on a couple of healthcare stocks. I was wondering which one you think might be better. I think they both look pretty good. First one is HCA. That's HCA Healthcare. And the other one is Tenet Healthcare, which is THC. If you guys can let me know if there's one that looks better than the other, I think they, like I said, I think they're both pretty good. Thank you very much.
All right, looking at HCA, that's the first one here. And this is more of a hospital operator. They're based in Nashville, and they're the largest collection of acute care hospitals in the U.S. It owns and operates about 185 hospitals, 121 freestanding outpatient surgery centers, and a broad network of physician offices, clinics, emergency rooms, et cetera, across 20 states. So that's what they do. Now let's take a look at THC was the other one. THC is the symbol on the other one, which is Tenet Healthcare. And very similar, and they also have a collection of hospitals, about 60, and over 550 outpatient centers. So more on the outpatient side as opposed to the hospital side. Okay. Now, when it comes to profitability, return on assets for HCA has risen from about 5% in 2013 all the way up to 14% trailing 12 months. So I like that trend. Return on assets for Tenet, back in 2013, it was actually negative, and it's still only about 3%. So definitely improved, but they have a lot of debt on their balance sheet, and their overall margins aren't quite as good. And their cash flows are certainly less consistent. So if I'm picking one or the other, I'm definitely going with HCA. Now you're going to pay a little bit of a premium, 14 times forward earnings versus Tenet is 11 times, but I'm going to pay up for the quality and a better balance sheet. HCA does not have the level of debt that Tenet does. So all that considered, you know, I'm a bigger fan of HCA. Now, I will say, if you look at the chart, let's see. Yeah, they're both weakening, and HCA would probably be a little bit weaker, but very similar charts. You know what? I worry the most, really, about regulation within the healthcare space. And Obamacare solved some problems, but I think we can all agree it didn't really solve the broad problem, which is healthcare inflation. And so as that continues to snowball on our on individuals as well as us as a country, I see the trend more towards single payer, some sort of Medicare for all type of thing. This isn't me saying whether it's good or bad. I just see that trend eventually taking place because at some point it breaks, right? You can't have the healthcare inflation go up more than the broad inflation of the economy for infinitum. Otherwise, it becomes the entire economy. And so there's too many issues there. And so that's why I worry about these type of names longer term. But if I'm picking one or the other, I'm definitely going with HCA. Now let's go to Jeffrey in El Paso, looking at Kinder Morgan, KMI. You own it or looking to buy it?
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. I bought Kinder Morgan in late 2020, and I was wondering what your price target is and whether you think it's something that I should keep long term or take the profit and move on.
Okay, well, this is Kinder Morgan. This is one of the largest natural gas transportation and storage servicing companies in North America, about a $44 billion market cap. And, you know, the plan to increase LNG exports to Europe is certainly going to help any pipeline company. Now, I do think this is slightly overvalued. Our value is around $16-$17. Now it's at 19 and change. So, you know, it's in the range. It's not drastically overvalued by any means. You know, the biggest risk here is if there is eventually some sort of export ban, which I think is entirely possible over the next few years. And that would hurt Kinder Morgan and any of the pipeline companies pretty dramatically. So you want to keep an eye on that and make sure that you're aware of that particular risk that is unique to kind of this time of higher energy prices worldwide. So I like it. It's we own a different pipeline company, but this is definitely one of the biggest and best and one of the best well-run. But just be aware of that risk. And I wouldn't say it's cheap. And the technicals look strong. They're fine. But it wouldn't be my first pick, let's just say that. Thanks for the call. Now, Steve and I are thankful for your podcast support, and our free downloads will continue. I want to make you aware of two other ways to find our unbiased guidance. InvestTalk has a YouTube channel as well as an Instagram following as well. So just head over to those platforms and search InvestTalk. Remember, two T's. Now, the InvestTalk phone lines are open, so give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Your objective is to work hard, plan well, and achieve financial freedom, right? You're in luck because Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your finance and investment questions. Call 888-99-CHART.
Now, my focus point today is based on the story behind this question. Is there a strategy to prevent a portfolio flatline? Inflation climbing and yield curve inversion. A lot of people are using the R word. And what does that mean for return expectations for this year and going into 2023? So we're going to discuss that and a prediction from Goldman. Also, how are governments around the world combating higher inflation, mainly fuel and food prices? So we're going to look at that. Also, how are U.S. consumers doing in this environment of low unemployment, strong wage inflation, but also strong inflation, strong general inflation in the economy and cost inflation? So we're going to unpack that data. Also, Tether. That is an area where a lot of people are worried, especially within the crypto market, and regulators have been trying to really take a deep dive, and they've been unable to due to lack of transparency. And might that be a big risk within the crypto markets over the next few years? And we're going to look at that story if we have time. But let's take a look at the market today. We had a small pullback in the markets at the end of last week, just into some support, and we had a nice bounce back today, about two-thirds of 1% on the S&P. The strength really lied in the tech stocks, in the NASDAQ. Growth definitely had a nice comeback today. NASDAQ was up 271 points, almost 2% on the day. And that has to do, I think, with interest rates kind of mellowing out a bit. And we're not seeing that headwind for those growthier names, right? And they've been oversold. So I said this in my past few videos on YouTube that this is ready for a bit of a bounce, and not shocked to see this kind of counter trend rally, at least in the near term. So that's where we are today. You had a little bit of a down day. Actually, gold was up just slightly. Silver, that was also, that was actually down slightly. And the dollar was strong, as well as the 10-year. What are we doing the 10-year? Yeah, it's up 3 basis points. So still kind of in this 2.4% range, which, remember, mortgage rates typically are about 150 to 200 basis points above the 10-year treasury rate. So, you know, we're right around the 200 to 250. So around the 4.5 to 5% rate on the 30-year mortgage. Now let's pivot back to the Vestoc Voice Bank for a call that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. I have a question regarding Sabra Healthcare. Actually, it's a REIT. The symbol is SBRA. Wanted to see what your overall opinion is and what would be a good entry point and what you think the outlook is for the company as well. Thanks for your show, and I'll be listening for the answer there. Thanks again. Bye.
All right, Sabra Healthcare, and this is a healthcare REIT. It operates nursing facilities, assisted living centers, and mental health facilities. The issue with this, I'm not a huge fan of the nursing facilities. I know you have baby boomers retiring, and they're going to get older, and they're going to need more services. But there's a lot of overcapacity within the industry, and historically, especially Sabre, they've had poor profitability, return on equity in the mid single digits, and it's at near an all time low. And the cost to operate these centers due to COVID have just gotten bigger and bigger. And this has been a longer-term downtrend. And yes, it's rallied recently, but it's up to the 200-day moving average, the 50-week moving average. And it's been in a downtrend since COVID. Actually, before COVID, It peaked in October of 2019. That was the last peak. Actually, it peaked all the way. I'm just scrolling back. Yeah, see, this just continues to grind lower and lower and lower. And shares outstanding continue to go higher and higher and higher. So it can't really truly afford that dividend. I'm an absolute pass on this one. I would not touch this. Now, moving into a break, and but I'm not going anywhere. My phone lines are open for your finance and investment questions here on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
You've got a portfolio to grow and protect, so get your finance and investment questions together and call Steve Peasley and Justin Klein. They're ready with their unbiased answers. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Ken in Texas. He wants to talk about corporate bonds.
Yeah, Justin, you know, I've always heard that you're supposed to allocate according to your age, like subtract your age from, 100, and then have, like with me, 70 years old, 70% bonds and 30% equities. Mm-hmm. Is that, what kind of credence do you give that? And I also have one other question. I've got an allocation of 47% fixed, 33 equity and 20 in cash right now, and I'm wondering, am I too heavy on the bonds? What's your thoughts on all of that?
Well, I think the 100 minus your age is a good baseline that you want to think about, but I don't think it should be used as gospel. Everyone's a little bit different, and their time horizon's different. So, for example, you might be 70, but this money might be earmarked for a child, one of your children or grandchildren, and therefore the time horizon for those investments are a lot longer. So you want to think about that, and then consideration of where the best opportunities in the market are as well. So should you lean on bonds when yields remain very, very low? You know, probably not. So that might be lower than it typically would be. Also, consideration of your income needs. Is having that mix and that income level sufficient to live on? Then, you know, maybe that is a good mix for you. So having it as a baseline is fine. But just like everything, you have to make adjustments for your own particular situation, your own time horizon. How old are you, Ken?
I'm 70.
You're 70. Okay. So,
yeah, and what I'm looking at, pardon me, but what I'm looking at is on the bonds. I mean, I can get 4% and 5% fixed on it. And right now we spend what we take in. We're balanced on our income expenses. Mm-hmm. And so, if I can put it in bonds that mature in 25 or 26 and get my money back on it, then that's kind of where I've been looking on the bond end of it.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. We're definitely finding fixed income opportunities in the corporate bond space now up to 5.5%, 6% sometimes, and going out just a few, 3, 4, 5 years. And I think this is a much better time to be buying bonds than it was over the past few years. Now, is it fantastic yields? No, but definitely relative, it's getting a lot better. But yeah, I mean, if you can find those yields, 5-6%, and then you can have confidence they're going to stay in business over the next 4 or 5 years, then that's a good place to be, especially if you're reliant on that income. So you have some cash, but you probably want to put some of that cash to work right now in the corporate bond space.
Okay. All right, my friend. Thank you. God bless y'all. I appreciate you.
Thanks for the call, Ken. Thank you. Now, my focus point today is based on the story behind this question. Is there a strategy to prevent a portfolio flatline? And this is coming from Goldman Sachs, and they gave their base case scenario for the S&P this year, and it's 4,700. 4,700. And today, the S&P closed at almost 4,600, 4,582. So you're talking about a 3-ish percent increase by the end of the year. And once again, that's their best case scenario, their best case scenario. Their worst case scenario, S&P finishes at 3,600, down 21% from where we are today. Now, they think that the 2.10 version will continue to get worse throughout the year. And they put the odds of recession within the next 2 years at 38%. So a little more than a third. And they're seeing a similar instance as 73, where you had high inflation and you had the yield curve inversion. And that's where they're seeing a lot of parallels. Now, I said this before, but I'll try to reiterate it. What the bond market is signaling is that the path of the Fed, that the Fed has promised, is going to break something and cause a recession. That is what the bond market is signaling with this 2.10 inversion. With the 3-month to 10-year spread actually widening out and increasing, that's telling you that that break isn't in the next few months, that they probably have a high rate hike or two, maybe even three, before things get dicey. Okay. And I think that's ultimately what it's trying to say, because it would reverse. The 3-month would reverse. It would go the other way if it was trying to signal that what they've done so far is going to break the market. And the question is, how much tightening will the Fed follow through with? And what will inflation look like as we get into the back half of the year? Now, clearly the war has kept inflation kind of rolling over the last couple of months. Whereas absent the war, you would probably have already seen some indication that inflation was moderating some. So a lot's going to depend on what happens with the war and supply chains around the world. You're already seeing demand being eroded with higher prices in some instances, and that's helping supply chains some. But that's kind of, it's pretty interesting that they're kind of looking for a flat market. And I don't disagree with that, but that doesn't mean that you can't find opportunity. Flat market means that some are going up, some sectors are going up, and some sectors are going down. Now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your questions live at 888-99-CHART.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
You know what's great? Being able to work productively from anywhere. I mean, with just a laptop and decent Wi-Fi. Guess what's not so great? Having your team spread out across the country while you try to keep everyone on the same page and focused on critical tasks. You'll be glad you discovered Coda, a new kind of doc that brings words, data, and teams together. You see, with your best writer in City A, your star presenter in City B, and your numbers wizard in City C, things can get complicated. But with the power of Coda, everything in your workflow is synced. For example, make an update in a table, and it automatically shows up everywhere for every team member. That's right. No more relying on copy and paste to keep essential projects current. With Coda, your team can operate on the same information and collaborate the way things should be, with efficiency and speed, in real time. Coda comes with a set of building blocks that anyone can combine to create a doc as powerful as an app. Coda is endlessly customizable and connected. There are templates for anything and everything. Product roadmap, remote onboarding, OKR tracker, meeting notes. You name it, Coda has it. Coda started from scratch and built a new type of doc that blends the best parts of documents, spreadsheets, presentations, and applications. With Coda, you can solve for just about anything. And right now, you can get started having your team all working together on the same page for free. Head over to coda.io/invest. That's coda.io to get started for free. coda.io/invest. Understanding investment options can be a daunting, time-consuming task. The same is true for the right work software. Let's focus on the work software you should know about, monday.com WorkOS. First, what is monday.com WorkOS? It's a flexible platform that gives teams the ability to easily customize work software to fit their needs. With Monday.com WorkOS, you can integrate all your favorite tools and apps into one centralized platform to unify work. Automate manual processes to save time and enhance efficiency. Visualize project progress and notify stakeholders on updates in real time. Collaborate across teams and departments. Import all your existing files and data into one organized place. In other words, Monday.com WorkOS is a powerful work software that lets you manage all your work exactly the way you want. You can customize your workflows so that everyone understands their role in moving work forward. With Monday.com, managers have full visibility into what their team is working on. No check-ins, email chains, or team calls necessary. The platform is super intuitive and easy to use, and there are already 127,000 customers that are powered by Monday.com. To start your free 2-week trial, go to Monday.com/podcast. That's Monday.com/podcast. Get your free 2-week trial started right now. Go to Monday.com/podcast. That's Monday.com/podcast.
Managing multiple mutual funds, researching professional services, where to put your savings. If it's about money and if it's important to you, we want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on InvestTalk.
Get ready to hear a cha-ching that can make your life a whole lot easier. That's the sound of another smooth Shopify transaction. And now you ask, what is Shopify? Quite simply, Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that you can use to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs the resources once exclusively reserved for big business. Shopify provides a great-looking online store that brings your ideas to life with easy access to the tools to manage your day-to-day operations and drive sales. Know this, Shopify powers millions of entrepreneurs from first sale to full scale. That's more than a catchy phrase. It's reality. With Shopify, you can get started by building and customizing your online store without the need for coding or design experience. Shopify has thousands of integrations and third-party apps, from on-demand printing to accounting to advanced chatbots and beyond. Shopify instantly lets you accept all major payment methods. Plus, with 24/7 support, you're never alone. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. Ready to take your dream to the next level? Go to shopify.com/invest, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Start selling on Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/invest right now. shopify.com/invest.
A quick reminder, if there's a term that you hear mentioned on the program but you're unclear about what it means or you have a question about it, we want you to ask. It's very likely that you're not the only one with that same question. 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is always made better when our listeners contribute their questions. So tell your friends and family members they can interact in real time with Steve Peasley and Justin Klein during the InvestTalk live stream program between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Or they can leave their questions anytime 24/7 in the InvestTalk voice bank. 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, Tyler from Kansas City. Your podcast really fills the void for individuals who have knowledge of the stock market but no one to discuss financials with. I really have enjoyed listening to all your podcasts over the years and recommend you guys to everyone I can. This topic is for Justin, if possible, and as much as I'd like to ask about a money-losing tech stock, my question today is regarding options. Luckily, I recognized late last year that the market seemed to be getting ahead of itself and decided to pursue a covered call strategy. I try to strictly own forever stocks that are shareholder-friendly, and I don't want to pay taxes on the gains, so I find covered calls as the best strategy when my stocks get ahead of themselves. I'm looking for any tips that you could share with us in regard to the strategy that you put into place. I know 45 to 60 days out seems to be a hot spot to maximize time decay. I know to roll them when they get about 7 to 10 days out from expiration, But with your type of experience and utilizing the strategy, do you have any other tips or main viewpoints you could share? Thanks again. I'll listen on the podcast.
Thanks for the kind words and spreading the word about InvestTalk. And you hit on a few points that I would have started with on how to sell covered calls. So that, those are the main ones, right? The goal of selling covered calls is to get that time decay that accelerates typically in the last 60 days, but especially the last 30 days. So you want to kind of capture that last 30 days as much as possible. Now, what else I would do is, it's not just about the time, but there's the strike price as well. And what strike price you pick is going to have a big factor in the premium that you're going to get. So how much hedge to the downside you'll have, and how much it might limit the upside of your position. So what I typically do when we manage our covered call strategy for clients is we look at the chart and where resistance is. So I like to pick a strike where there is resistance, where there's likely to be hesitation to the upside anyway. And that oftentimes gives me time, you know, while it's hesitating for a few weeks, typically, to find a price on the option that I can buy back and roll it out another 30 days, maybe 60 days, to a higher strike, so that and still create a credit to where you're buying it back for a low price and getting more premium from it. And that allows you to continue to keep the upside potential of the stock, but also bring in more premium, more revenue to hedge on the downside and just overall boost the return, especially if the stock kind of goes nowhere. You know, we just talked about a market where the upside is not fantastic because of tightening liquidity conditions, higher inflation that's eating into consumer budgets and the like. And that means the market could go sideways, but if you sell call options and they expire worthless or you buy them back for less, you can boost your overall return, and the market or the mix of stocks you own maybe don't go up very much, but you're getting a boost from those call options. So I think it's a great strategy in this market. I hope that helped unpack a little bit of kind of our secret sauce, but ultimately it comes down to the portfolio you're executing and the underlying stocks. And that's probably the last thing, is a lot of people focus too much on buying the underlying stock and selling high implied volatility, meaning the options that have big premiums because the market's pricing in a lot of potential movement. What I've learned is focus on the quality stocks first and less on implied volatility. So that's another quick tip. Now let's look at an iTunes review question. John101 says, do you have any information on a good entry price for Freeport McMoRan? Now Freeport is one of the largest copper producers in the world, and it was down 6 cents today to $50 and, let's see, 90 cents on the close. Revenues are growing dramatically, definitely off the map from the big drop in 2020 when earnings were only 55 cents, now expected to be $3.91 this year, $3.31 next year. But that's probably assuming a moderation in copper prices. And with the commodity names, you know, you just need to pick good operators. Now, I'm not saying you ignore the value, and I still think Freeport, it's not that expensive. You're talking about 16 times forward earnings. Sorry, less than that. 12, 13 times forward earnings. It's not that high. You know, our value is definitely higher for Freeport. It's a good operator, and so that's important. And so, you know, I would just be buying here. You know, there could be a pullback in the short term, but it finds support typically around the 50-day moving average. That would be my target, is the 50-day. It's in an uptrend. If you think copper prices are going higher, which you know, I think you should, we think copper prices are going higher, then you just buy on pullbacks. You're not going to get a huge drop, but back to the 50-day would not shock me, and that's where I'd be picking up Freeport. Now let's go talk to Chris in Atlanta looking at Hess.
Hello?
Yes. Is this H&E Equipment Services?
Yes, it is. I was looking at this as a kind of industrial play with the rental and leasing services. Everything looks good from what I could see, but I was curious, is this a long-term hold? Because like when I look at the monthly chart, it kind of has good years and kind of falls off for 3 or 4 years in between. Is this something you would short-term buy?
And the reason that it kind of has big swings is because the profits have big swings. In 2015, they made $1.25, then down to $1.05 in 2016. And the economy kind of took a step back then. And then it recovered into 2019, making $2.70. And then it was even kind of in a downtrend, actually peaked in 2018. And they made a lower high in 2019 before COVID, and then obviously fell off a cliff with that. But it's made a strong comeback. So let's make $4.67 a share next year. Now, this is an equipment service company. It's focused on heavy construction and industrial equipment. It rents, sells, and provides parts and services for four categories: high lifts or aerial work platforms, cranes, earth moving equipment, and industrial lift trucks. So what I like is that it's in the industrial space, and we're onshoring. I know it's not talked about enough, to be honest with you, but our industrial supply chain is growing, and the Chinese supply chain is shrinking. Now it's still there, it's still very important, but companies are looking to relocalize their supply chains and their manufacturing. And I think that's a strong trend that's going to benefit a company like this. So yeah, I mean, I like it. It definitely has kind of an up and down throughout the years, but the return on equity has always been kind of in the low 30s on average over the last decade. That's pretty good. And it's been, it hasn't increased its dividend recently, but it certainly has room for that. So you're going to get kind of it all over the place, to be honest with you. It's definitely going to have its ups and downs. It's going to be more volatile than your blue chip industrial companies. It's only $1.5 billion market cap. But overall, I like it because I think it does benefit from a lot of secular trends that are only beginning. Thanks for the call, Chris. That was HEES, H&E Equipment Services. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. Now let's check in on how countries around the world are dealing with higher food and energy costs. And a lot of this has to do with protests and social unrest that are breaking out all across the world. And governments are adopting subsidies, tax breaks to help individuals, businesses, to get through this time of higher prices. Now, here's the issue, though. Now, that might help on an individual basis, but A, how long can it last? Do they have the finances for it? Especially emerging market countries, not so much. And this also it prevents the natural ebb and flow of higher prices, bring on more supply and weaker demand, and bring prices back down. Well, it might bring on more supply, but if the subsidies continue, and we've even talked about it here in the US, if subsidies continue, it's preventing the natural demand destruction that comes with those higher prices. Now, Europeans are protesting because of this dwindling purchasing power. Greek farmers in mid-March drove their tractors to the agriculture ministry in Athens to demand relief. Sicily protesters, truckers protested food deliveries, and they stopped them in a lot of cases. In Spain, truck drivers striked, causing food shortages in some areas. In France, you're starting to see, or across Europe, you're starting to see the reaction of governments. France did passed a 400 million euro relief package. Spain, strikers rejected a 500 euro government aid package. And they thought it was too small. And you have countries, like I said, all across the world. And this is stretching budgets, whose budgets are already stretched because of COVID. Emerging economies are going to have to refinance $7 trillion worth of debt this year. That's up from $5.5 trillion last year. Places like Nigeria, they're increasing their subsidies. Egypt, the world's largest wheat importer, they buy 70% of the grain from Ukraine and Russia. And they're spending $1 billion to prevent promoting its regulating prices on non-subsidized bread. And so this is the biggest worry, is that countries around the world are going to prevent. They're going to do what they can and spend money in order to stop the spiraling cost of food and energy. And so that's why this decade is likely to be a decade of persistent inflation, because you're not going to get that demand destruction. And then you also are not getting as much supply because of ESG and just availability of workers and disrupted supply chains in order to bring more supply on. So it's very interesting to see this, and we're early on in this, and you already see governments reacting in a big, big way. Let's go to Robert in Pleasanton looking at Domino's Pizza.
Hey, Justin. Yeah, I used to own this, and I sold it, I think, maybe 6 or 8 months ago. And so I've been keeping an eye on it. It looks like it's down 32%, whatever, from the high. And just wondering what you think about it now, because I'm sure, you know, it had gone up considerably due to COVID, but I guess the question is, you know, has it gone down enough now to make it something to take a look at again?
Okay. Remember when Kramer called this a tech stock? I thought that was so funny on his show. But this is down pretty dramatically, about 30% from its 52-week high. Yields 1.1%. Earnings are expected to be $14.41 this year. That's up from $13.60 last year, and expect to be $16.66 next year. And it's about a $400 stock. Problem is, analysts are now downgrading earnings expectations for this year and next year. And this was clearly a big benefactor because of COVID. Less places to go out to eat, and you didn't want to sit, want or could, couldn't sit in a restaurant. And so it was just easier to order a pizza. And 2019, it made $9.57, $12 in 2020, $13.60, like I said, last year. So the question is what's the reversion to the mean, and what is the right multiple for that? Last quarter, revenue fell 1% year over year. Earnings were still up 23%, but you're seeing that slowdown in growth. A year ago, revenue growth was 18%, and earnings growth was 21%, 37% in the second quarter of 2020. So what's the right multiple for that? Currently, it's about, it looks like in the high, mid to high 20s. I think that's too high. And the chart remains in a downtrend. It's kind of consolidating down here. So our value is closer to about $330 per share. Now it's at 400 and a little over 400. So I don't like the technicals, and I don't like the slowdown in growth, as well as the downgrade of future earnings expectations by analysts. So I'm going to pass on it for now. Now let's grab another caller question at 888.
I'd like to get you guys' take on Kimberly Clark, KMB. Looking to put it in my dividend portfolio. Thanks, guys.
All right, this is Kimberly Clark. And for everyone out there, they make Kleenex, toilet paper, Charmin, for example. And so this is the epitome of a consumer staple. But it's in a downtrend. And the reason it's in a downtrend? Simple. Inflation. I don't like these type of names in this environment. Why? Because they make the premium product. And you're already seeing people trade down from Charmin to the store-bought brand. And it's difficult for them to pass on the higher prices to consumers. And that's why last quarter you saw revenue up 3% year over year, but earnings down 23% year over year. Quarter before that, revenue up 7%, earnings down 6%. Quarter before that, revenue up 2%, earnings down 33%. And this year, earnings are expected to fall 5%. That fell last year from $7.74 in 2020 to $6.18, lower than pre-pandemic levels. So clearly, this environment, post-COVID world, Kimberly-Clark is not doing very hot. And it's very important to understand how well these companies can pass on price hikes or higher input costs, and Kimberly-Clark can't. So we're heading into a break, so give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk. Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Is it delivering the types of gains you want and need to achieve financial freedom? Well, turn up the volume, because there are many questions that deserve unbiased answers. And Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. My question for today is about dividend stocks. As all these stocks are starting to get into a buy territory, I wanted to know which would be a better buy for a dividend, AT&T or the stock 3M? Again, that's AT&T and 3M. Which do you think would be a better buy? And two, I'm going to put one of these stocks in my Roth IRA. But what do you think about putting it also in my brokerage account as well, too? Hoping down the line, maybe 10, 15 years from now, I would retire a little bit early and live off these dividend stocks. Thank you very much. Looking forward to the answer. Have a great day. Bye.
If I'm picking one, I'm going to pick AT&T. I like the spinoff. I like the more becoming more of a pure play wireless carrier. And they just have strong revenue growth. Or strong subscriber growth and profitability, and trades at a pretty cheap multiple. So over the long term, I'm going to go with AT&T over 3M, but both are solid blue chip names. So those are my takes. Now, lastly, let's get into the consumer and how they're handling the higher inflationary environment. Well, U.S. households increased their spending by 0.2% in the month of February. Now that's down from 2.7% in January. And personal incomes increased by 0.5% in the month of February, but that's not fast enough to keep up with inflation, which rose about 0.6% on the month. So slight negative in the real incomes there. Now, that means that incomes after taxes adjusted for inflation fell for the seventh straight month. And that's to the lowest level since March of 2020. So that's clearly not fantastic. And not a situation that can be sustained. Now, the consumer does have much better balance sheets than we did pre-COVID because of all the money that was out there. People paid off credit cards, paid off loans, etc., and just have more cash in the bank. And a lot of it has to do with not paying rent, not paying mortgages, etc. And that's pretty big. Now, the big problem in the near term, though, is inflation is going to be worse for this for the month of March, and that's going to drive also a mix of how people spend. For example, services, that spending rose 0.9% in February, and goods spending declined by 1%. So this is what we talk about when you're looking at retailers and all these different types of goods producing businesses. You have to adjust for a falling demand environment, and it's difficult to find out where that floor is going to be. It's going to level out at some point, but you see this shift from buying physical goods to spending on services, going out to eat, traveling, etc. Now, spending on vehicles and parts dropped 4% because people just can't get them. And so that's a big part of the demand drop, or the physical goods drop in demand. Now, there is going to be some pent up demand for certain goods that are in short supply. So be cognizant of that. Don't paint all goods as one with one broad brush. This is definitely a time where you need to understand the supply chain behind the business and whether it's struggling and has struggled over the past couple of years, or it's been able to really supply their customers, and thus profits have been going up. So you really have to dig into that. Now, what's interesting is major U.S. airlines said early in March that their revenues in the first quarter of 2020 will likely be at the high end of their broader range to start the year. So it just shows that that demand for travel remains very robust, very robust. Now, consumer confidence, it remains kind of mixed. Consumers are optimistic about COVID, about labor market, but obviously the big boogeyman is inflation. Now, inflation and shortages have already pushed consumers to switch from more expensive brands, what I talked about earlier. There's new data showing about 70% of U.S. shoppers said they had purchased a new or different brand than they had pre-pandemic because of higher prices. So that's where you see the shift to those cheaper brands, and thus hurting companies like Kimberly-Clark. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads. And we do track the numbers, and we're over the $40 million download mark, thanks to you. And as always, you can get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes. And if you leave your question with your review, we will prioritize your answer. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.